This Friday at 8 p.m., Westminster Presbyterian Church will present a special performance featuring organist Pamela Ryder Feenstra. The concert is a unique program of her design entitled Gratitude, Psalms, Hymns, and Improvisations, which involves the audience as congregation. It is a holistic and spiritual festival of hymn singing, liturgy, and prayer. I recently spoke with Dr. Ryder Feenstra by phone about this fascinating program and about all of the important work that she does outside of the concert hall. Dr. Pamela Ryder Feenstra, it's a pleasure to speak with you today. Thanks for talking with me.
It's wonderful to be with you on WUOT, Melanie.
Well, first, I'd like to hear what drew you to the organ as your instrument of choice. How did you become an organist?
I started out on the piano and violin and singing, and I loved to sing, and that's what drew me to the organ, because the organ is particularly well-suited to lifting people's voices in song, and it was a great way to combine my keyboard skills with the love for choral music and congregational singing.
That makes sense. You've performed on organs all over the world. Each organ is different and unique, and also the acoustics of the room in which it is built can greatly alter its sound and feel. What have been some of your most memorable or profound experiences performing?
I spent time in North Germany many summers in a row, and then my first sabbatical project I did in North Germany. And in the northwest corner of northern Germany, it's mostly rural land, and there are extant organs there that were not bombed in World War II. Most of the city organs in the more populated parts of Germany were bombed, and so those historic organs were destroyed. But in this farmland, there are still some real gems, just treasures. And many of them are in smaller churches. There's one in Norden, Germany, that's in a small city, but it's quite a spectacular Erbschnitger organ. And the acoustics, as you mentioned, really enhance the sound of that instrument.
And so what time period were these organs built?
So they, in the 16 and 1700s, Erbschnitger was active at the cusp of the turn of that millennium, and he and many of his pupils were very well known, and their instruments remain some of the finest today of the Northern European instruments. And I've also explored Cavaillé-Coll organs and Cliquot in France, and many different organ builders in Italy, and then I lived in Sweden for a number of years. And as you said, each instrument is different, and each country brings its own flavor from, I think there are elements of it, of the language of the land that affect how the sounds come out of the pipes and what kinds of vowels and consonants. For instance, French, there's a more nasal quality to some of the French reeds, and the French language itself has a fairly forward nasal sound, and yet there's this voluptuousness of the French cream sauces in the cooking that also come through in some of the principal sounds. The German organs tended to have a stronger sense of consonants the way the German language does, that the speech was stronger and more pronounced, and again, that really provides excellent support for congregational singing.
One of your specialties is improvisation. From what I understand, this has long been a tradition in organ playing. Can you talk about when and why this skill originated for organists?
Yes, very early on, well, of course, paper wasn't in existence while people were first playing the organ. The organ dates back to the 3rd century BCE. So the main way in which the organ was played was with improvisation. It was first used as signals for festive events or battles. And then in time, that tradition continued through the time of Bach and beyond into the 19th century, but at the time of Bach, for instance, and in the whole generation or two or three before him, when an organist would audition for a position, 90% of the audition requirement would be improvisation, so making up music at the moment. And that's been very fascinating to me because it was such an expected skill back then that not so many people wrote down exactly how they learned how to improvise. There are some initial steps in terms of music theory and harmony, but beyond that, sometimes it's hard to figure out how they did it. We just know that they did it, and they did it extremely well. So that's been part of my life quest, to research specialty, is to study particularly the improvisation of J.S. Bach, because his reported improvisations were at such a high level. So I knew it's not something that just drops from the sky and lands on a few people and misses everyone else, like the rapture in reverse, that there must be a way to study it. And so that's what I've devote a great deal of my time and energy to, is figuring out what kind of pedagogy did Bach learn? How did he learn how to improvise? And part of that is by copying music. He was just very eager to copy music, so much so that he sometimes had to do so surreptitiously if he wasn't permitted access to a score, and he would find it and copy it by moonlight. But that's how he learned different styles, too. He copied music first from German composers and then French and Italian, and he would then try to compose in those styles and then also improvise at the same time. So composition and improvisation are very closely connected. And improvisation requires the same level of practice that repertoire playing does. It's just that it hasn't been integrated into the academy or the conservatories in modern days the way it was taught as sort of an apprentice art in earlier times.
So how did you learn this skill? Did you study it, or did it just come naturally to you?
Well, I used to practice, when I would practice my piano lessons when I was a child, from age six on, I would dutifully go through the repertoire that was assigned to me. But I loved playing so much that I was curious, how do they make this music? So I guess it took that same kind of curiosity of, how does this work and how does that work and why does this sound better than that? And if that doesn't sound good, what would make it sound good? I just created this game for myself that I would play recordings and then listen to it really carefully and then go to the piano and try to imitate what I heard, and go back and forth until I could play what I heard. And then I would start making variations on what I heard to see if I could do something interesting with it. And this was just my childhood game. I didn't know it was called improvisation, but I guess I was creating my own pedagogy in a way before I really had read all these treatises and documentation from pupils saying this is what Bach did. And so I knew it could be learned. And I, whenever someone said to me, you know, some people can do it and others can't, I knew that wasn't true, because I had, the reason I could do it is that I had practiced it. So then I set about, because I had taught at universities for 20 years, I thought I have to be able to teach my students this, and they have to have a system, a pedagogy that they can own, so that when they graduate, they can continue to grow as improvisers because they know how to teach themselves at that point.
Friday's program seems to be sort of similar to a lessons and carols type of service. Tell me about the intention behind the concert. What is the unifying theme?
Yes, it is. That's a good analogy. I might call it a hymn festival or a psalm festival, and it's all encompassing the theme of gratitude, which is a theme I've just been working with for the past few months, because I think gratitude is such an important attribute, and it really makes one's life and outlook so much better. And so I've been studying that. What is gratitude, and what have different people said about gratitude, and how do we come to live a grateful life? And many, many quotes are about making music, that can bring joy, that can bring this sense of well-being. And so I had this idea that it would be nice to bring that theme of gratitude to the organ, the beautiful organ that's at Westminster Presbyterian in Knoxville, and then create a hymn festival. So we'll have readings, as is true in Lessons and Carols, and responsive litanies done in dialogue between the leader and the whole group that will gather for the program. And then I will improvise. I'll play some of my own compositions, but they're all based on hymn tunes or psalm tunes. And then for each set of variations or preludes that I improvise, then the group gathered, it will be an audience of sorts, but I almost think of it more as a congregation because they're participating in the program. Mm-hmm. They'll have the opportunity to sing with this fabulous organ. And really, this is my favorite thing to do because when you asked at the beginning of the interview what brought me to the organ, it was being able to lift people's voices in song. Mm-hmm. And the pipe organ, with its being powered by air, by this natural material of or element of wind, it works in a similar way to the human voice. So the combination I find just both fascinating but also really stirring, moving. And I hope anyone who comes to attend will find it so as well.
Absolutely. It sounds like it will be a really wonderful and unique program for sure. I understand that you have just recorded a new CD, which will be available for purchase at the concert.
Yes, and the sort of serendipitous aspect of that is that I recorded a CD of my own organ compositions. I actually came to composing early on, but always after improvising, so my improvisations informed the compositions. Mm-hmm. And I recorded this CD on two Richard Fox & Company organs. So this is a Tennessee organ builder, mm-hmm. and one of the finest in the world. They are in Ooltewah, and they build in historic styles, quite similar to the North German organs that I was telling you about. And so they have instruments throughout the U.S. and other countries as well. And I wanted to record my compositions on two of their instruments. Mm-hmm. So the CD is played on a Richardson Fox organ in Scottsdale, Arizona, mm-hmm. and then another one in Cleveland, Ohio. And the CD is actually not available to the public until July. But because this is a Richardson Fox organ mm-hmm. at Westminster, Fleur de Saône, the label, allowed me to bring some copies to Knoxville as a pre-release special for the concert.
Excellent.
So I'm just thrilled about that.
Yeah, what a happy coincidence that is.
Yes.
In addition to being an active performer, you are an advocate for marginalized populations, and you found a way to incorporate this passion into your music. I wonder if you could talk about how you've done this.
Yes. So some of this will be evident at the program on Friday, as I have started writing hymn texts and music to go with it that talk about how to care for our global neighbors. And I've been saddened about the hate speech and hate actions that have become, again, more prevalent. And I find it really disturbing. And my kids will say to me, why can't we all get along? Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, in that childlike way, that's mm-hmm. a beautiful question and one that I don't understand why we can't all get along mm-hmm. either, even though we have different opinions. And so I'm trying to write texts to encourage an alternative to acting out in hate and instead embracing love and gratitude and being able to appreciate differences in different cultures. Mm-hmm. So another project, I composed over 100 songs for children for them to learn how to become peacemakers. They sing about peacemakers who are famous, like Mahatma Gandhi or MLK Jr. or Mother Teresa or Wangari Maathai. And then they sing songs about how to find peace within and to share that I have songs that teach academic subjects as well, because music can be such a wonderful vehicle for helping people to learn and retain their learning. And I've introduced that in a number of schools, and most recently in the Detroit public schools, because the arts are not well funded at all, and in many schools children are never taught to sing. And so this hugely important vehicle for their oral learning and for their brain development that enhances motor skills as well as problem-solving skills is missing in many, many schools. And so I have a passion for working in the schools and providing materials that teachers may access and homeschool parents may access so that they can offer this to their children. And then a third project that I'm working on right now, I have a small grant to interview people from communities that are Arab and Muslim and African American and Latino, Latina, mm-hmm. and Jewish cultures. And it's all communities that have been marginalized in historically, but then also again recently. And I've interviewed individuals and have heard just incredible stories, both of just horrible, horrible treatment that some of the people have received, and also just their desire for peace and for loving solutions. Mm-hmm. So I've been deeply affected by that and have composed four pieces, one for each community, that reflect their voices. And it's my attempt to lift up their voices and to show value for the various cultures and people who make up this wonderful tapestry of the world, the human tapestry, mm-hmm. in hopes that we can eventually come to a point where we consider ourselves a quilt, where we're all connected somehow, even though we're different colors and different belief systems, perhaps different foods and different music. It's all part of the whole that makes us all stronger together if we can embrace that.
I love that imagery there, the tapestry, the quilt of everyone coming together. Well, Dr. Ryder Feenstra, it's been a pleasure speaking with you today. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Melanie.
Organist Pamela Ryder Feenstra will perform a unique, holistic, and spiritual program of music, hymns, and readings at Westminster Presbyterian Church, located at 6500 North Shore Drive in Knoxville, this Friday night at 8 p.m. More information can be found online at musicaorgany.org.